Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is an internationally acclaimed visual artist and designer, Luba Lukova. The Bulgarian-born artist is part of the forefront of a new generation of influential 21st century graphic designers that view poster design as an important communication tool as well as a means for personal expression. Lukova creates thought-provoking images that communicate instantly using easily understood imagery and metaphors. Perhaps one of her most famous images is that of Peace, which shows the silhouette of a dove constructed by collage using imagery of tanks, guns, and other types of weaponry. Lukova worked for the New York Times as an illustrator and designer for many years, first in the book review section and later in the opinion editorial pages, and her work is in the collection of the Museum of Modern Art, the Library of Congress, and the French National Library in Paris. Her portfolio of social justice images are currently on tour all over the nation and will be featured in the exhibition Luba Lukova, Designing Justice, which opens Friday at the Henry Zero Arts Center in the Tulsa Arts District. Lukova is currently the J. Donald Fagan Visiting Artist at the University of Tulsa, a collaboration between the School of Art, the Department of Sociology and Media Studies, and the Oklahoma Center for Humanities. She's doing a residency at the TU this week, and she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Luba Lukova, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The exhibit that opens this week features work from your social justice portfolio. And I think social justice has been a strong emphasis in your work, going back far beyond this portfolio. But what inspired this particular portfolio?
Well, this portfolio was published back in April 2008, so that's more than 10 years ago, and that was in this month before the Obama's election. But it was not actually meant to kind of do something for his campaign. It was just my own reaction as a visual artist to some of these issues that I always wanted to address. And I just published them in a set of 12 prints, published it myself, and just shout it up onto to the world in a way without thinking what's going to be next. And these 12 images immediately got almost viral on the internet, some of them. So I reprinted a couple of times, and that's how this thing got its own life.
So in 2008, you know, we have to remember this is the time of the financial meltdown. We had a momentous presidential election, and we'd gone through what we thought was some of the more interesting times in our country's history. I think we're still in those interesting times today. But at the time, I think there was this feeling that we needed to be addressing serious issues in America that weren't getting addressed. And I assume this was your reaction?
Exactly, exactly. Absolutely. And I honestly thought that with Obama's election, maybe half of these images will be irrelevant in the next 6 months.
Like unfortunately.
Yes. So one of these iconic symbols was one umbrella without the fabric covering. And the handle was the caduceus, the medical symbol, and that was health coverage, right? And I thought this was definitely be resolved in the first 6 months of his presidency. Nobody would even think about that. And look, we are now 12 years after, and this is as relevant as back then. So I always think also that times of social change and tension like these past years are the most generous, fertile times for coming up with visual ideas, you know.
Well, one of the things you do is you take what is an enormously complex issue, you're able to boil down that issue to a very simple imagery which speaks enormous great truth, which is such a great ability to do that. And what I think belies it is the imagery is so simple, it seems like it should be easy, but I can't imagine that it is easy at all. Can you talk about creating an image? One of the pieces that will be in the show is your image on income inequality, which is a very simple image. And often we use the image of a pie to talk about the wealth gap and income inequality. But you've used this incredibly simple image. It's a pie. One slice has many forks. The rest of the pie has one giant fork in it.
Yes.
You know, what a way of portraying that.
Yes.
So can you talk about the process of creating that and boiling down what is a really complex issue down to a very simple truth?
It's not easy, but actually, I enjoy this the most in the whole process, that you have to really engage your entire arsenal of tools, like your visual expressive tools, your intellectual thinking tools, and your experience as a person, just like an ordinary person, because I am really an ordinary person who happens to be an artist. And when I want to do something which is meant for the public so everybody could understand it, of course you have to use recognizable images. And very often you would see shapes and you know, objects that everybody knows what they are, but you kind of twist them in a way that they stop and say, wait a minute, something's not right here, what's that? So I sketch, of course, try different things. For example, this pie, I originally didn't draw it like the American pie. It was more like this European French tart, you know, with many layers and with one cherry. But then said, wait a minute, this should be more of the most generic, like American pie with apple that we cook for Thanksgiving. And then I wasn't sure how to name it, but then when you have the small piece separating from the big rest of the pie, there is this gap in between the two pieces. So income gap kind of worked perfectly for that, because the small pieces has a bunch of dozen of forks. It's clear that it's not about the pie, but it's about something else, and there is a big gap between what we get and what someone else gets with the big, gigantic fork, grabs the whole piece towards themselves. So I even have these sketches so people can see a little bit of the process. But yeah, it's just sketching, drawing, thinking. And in the end, I have also one other test after I finish something. In my studio, now when the cleaning person comes and I hear the bucket and all that, and I up and say, hey, how are you? I say, oh, what's new? And I said, hey, what do you think about this picture? And if that person reacts, I know I have done it right, you know, because it's not for me, and I'm used to it by staring for a whole day. But if someone who I know is not an artist, who is someone though who can understand the meaning, if they react, I know I've done it, and then good, I can print, you know. So little things like that. But not always this person comes, right? So I will email to my brother or to some people who definitely are not visual people, and I get their opinion. So,
well, you know, it's interesting. I realized I'd been seeing your work for years, and I never knew it, because for, I guess, one of your big breaks was working for the New York Times for a number of years, first in the book review section and then later on the op-ed page. And I'd been looking at your work for years. What was that like working at the New York Times?
This was my first job when I came to this country, into New York. And in fact, that made me stay, because they asked if I would be available to take assignments every week. And what was like, the deadlines are extremely tight. So the book review had like about a week, but sometimes they would say something new came, can you quickly do it? And it was a stressful situation, but to me, it was really that extreme exposure that I didn't realize that was happening, because at first you think it's just a newspaper, but when the first drawings start to come out, you see that people really read it. And I was getting a kick when I'm in the subway and I see someone's reading the paper and I see my drawing there and I'm quietly, you know, next to the person on the subway. So that was very uplifting for these first years in New York.
And what an incredible break, because, you know, I mean, a century ago, yes, illustration was all over magazines, yes, and newspapers, but now it's few and far between.
That's very true, and I can say, even in my experience for these almost 30 years, because when I first started drawing these pictures was 91, a long time ago, none of these magazines already commissioned that much work, and they, most of them, used photographs. When I started, New York Times was still a black and white publication, and I still believe that the power of a black and white drawing is far superior than a color sugar-coated photograph, because the drawing, and with the artist's touch, you get the essence of something, and people really get it, and it stays in their mind. So it was great. So at some point, the op-ed, in one crazy situation that they didn't have an artist for something, they called, and I did something really in a couple of hours, from reading a quick synopsis to faxing even. That was before the email. Imagine, usually there was a messenger who comes to pick up the original from my studio. That was such a tight deadline that I just faxed it. And believe it or not, I was with my hair dryer drying the ink because I thought it was going, went through the fax and it will smear. So they were on the other line and said, oh, yeah, it came out great. Good. Okay. So crazy, but a great experience. And probably this almost habitual synthesis that I have to synthesize something comes from these years of capturing a complex idea into a clean, simple, yet meaningful image. So that's definitely, this experience probably helped me in that. Like, I've heard that people...
Deadline design,
true. But not only about the synthesis, right? Because I've heard about people who write that if they start as journalists, that gives them this ability to try to say a lot with a few words. Mm-hmm. For me, it was a great introduction also to American culture because... doing the op-ed where all these people express issues that I didn't know much of them, but when you read them, you say, oh, yeah, that's absolutely right. That deserves attention. And you learn a lot and you become part of this New York and just basically life. You really become a working artist, blue-collar artist, like I always call myself, you know, Someone who is right there on the spot to do the hottest thing.
I was looking at some of the op-ed images, and one that really caught my eye was one on voter fraud. And it's the one where you have about three hands putting votes into a hopper, and you have just a very simple puppet's marionette attached to the hands.
Something, yes, I remember doing this.
You're looking at me like, I don't remember doing this, but it has your byline on it.
Yes, I did that. Yeah, well, it's true.
And I imagine you put that off in, just a few hours? Because it's
a few hours, believe me. I've even done things for 1 hour. When the article is not being written, they just give you the article. When beyond that, it's being written on the spot. And you just come up with a bunch of images. And oftentimes, when there was an article, even they would change the headline so the image kind of connects clearly. But in a way, it's a process, yeah, that you react on the spot and... to me, that's why it's important to have experience as a real person, because you could not be in all these situations that you have to visualize, but you just listen to your own heart, to your own voice, and you kind of realize that as an artist, you have a power to connect with people and that we are all the same in a way, that we have the same thoughts and desires and experiences. So just putting it down as an image is what I really love and what I can never lose interest and never get bored doing it.
My guest today is Luba Lukova, a visual artist and designer. She's the J. Donald Fagan visiting artist at the University of Tulsa. She's doing a residency with students this week, but at the end of the week, her exhibit, Designing Justice, opens Friday at the Henry Zero Arts Center in the Tulsa Arts District, and that will run through April 19th. And this is an exhibit that has been showing all over the country, really some of her strongest work and part of this justice portfolio, social justice portfolio that she created a little over 10 years ago, plus a lot of other work as well. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. I was really struck by something you said, because when you see your work, it is vividly colored. And yet you said, I really like working in black and white better.
True, but if you see, the black color is always present in my work.
Yes, it is.
It creates the structure, and the color maybe brings the emotional impact and makes it more stronger emotionally. But I would say all of these images could work clearly just in black and white. But definitely the color adds another element. But yeah, I think that black and white, for many reasons, is the color that graphic arts use. First of all, the eye reacts the strongest between the black and white. And then it has that edge that I love, you know. But black is always in my work.
I think the image I've seen the most over the past few years of yours is Peace, which, again, it uses color, although I think I have seen it in black and white.
Yeah,
but it is the image of a dove against a sky blue backdrop. But the dove is constructed wholly by pieces of weaponry.
This image was also first published on the op-ed page, and it was a black and white illustration. And the background, what you say now is blue, was black, and these little symbols, like a mosaic of war symbols, create the silhouette of the dove. They were white. And the story was on the American involvement in the Balkan War, whether we should go there or we should keep independent outside of the conflict. So the question was, war or not, you know, whether mm-hmm. to attack and continue with that terrible destruction of the region. So that was the drawing, how we protect peace by creating more wars, or the duality of war and peace. And when it was published, a few days after that, I was walking in New York and I see one organization, the War Resisters League, which is the oldest anti-war secular peace organization in America. They've put on one wall this image and then an announcement for meeting for some action.
So they'd already appropriated it.
Yeah, but they gave me the credit. Yeah. And I called them and I said, thank you, but you should have asked me. And if you want to use this as a poster, I think it would be better if we change the background color to blue, because that will emphasize the irony of the image. But the paper at that time is just black and white, so it wasn't possible. And I said, okay, good. So that's how I started my relationship with them. And I've done tons of work for them as well. And this became a poster in that way, as a blue background and the symbols are white.
And of course, the blue, the sky blue, sort of symbolizes peace in a way.
Exactly. But the message, when you read it closer, it's not about that. But yes, that's the irony. So with the color, you can, the metaphor, you can kind of even elaborate a little more. Yeah.
Well, in this show, you're going to see some really interesting imagery. One that uses black and white really effectively is the image of ecology, which is a man as a tree, and he's cutting down his own trunk. What a strong symbol of what we're doing to our environment.
Through the interdependence, we cannot exist outside of nature. And when we destroy nature, we destroy ourselves, yes. So this one, yes, the image is again black. But with black, you can create many textures, because you see that with the line work, you can create a texture of another color. But yeah, green was the most natural choice for this one, yes.
Can we talk about your artistic influences on your work? When we see faces, the faces are never at peace. They're tortured oftentimes, the imagery. And they really strike me as something out of Germany in the early part of the 20th century. I see a lot of influences of African-American artists as well from the last half century as well. What are the influences that have affected you in how you create your images and how you create your human forms, for example?
Yes. Well, these influences that you just said are definitely something that I've admired from a very early age. But in my family, my grandmother was a visual artist and she was educated in Munich in the 20s. So she was not the artist that I am, but through her, I've seen a lot of art books that she had brought with at home from Germany. So she was a painter and non-figurative painter, but a great colorist and a draftsman, draftwoman, whatever. Said, yeah. So in terms about the colors and all that, when I was a girl, my parents used to bring me often to the archaeology museum, and Bulgaria, where I'm originally from, is part of the Greek culture from the ancient times. So we had a lot of these vases with the black figures. So these black silhouettes truly impressed me, like the dynamic of the movement and just
there is some Greek.
Like,
there is a lot of Greek influences.
Yes,
now that you mentioned
yes. So that definitely impressed me, because you can see how with just a stroke of a brush they create a movement, and you know how dynamic they are, and there is always this drama in them. So that's one influence. Then I love folk art of all kinds of sources. So definitely African art. And then one other influence about this dramatic expression is that because I work a lot with the theater and I enjoy going to the rehearsals and seeing all these faces of actors, so that endless possibilities of human expression through the actors' faces and movements of the hands. I think the hands and the faces, the eyes, are the most expressive elements humans are. I use them a lot, yeah.
I have to mention another piece that I believe is in the show. It's called Censorship. These hands and faces are what you look at. And in it, it's an image of an obviously tortured flutist who is trying to play his flute. But again, to get to the symbol of the nature of the piece, his fingers are nailed to the flute, not on the holes. And so he can't play.
Yes, true. But like I said, yeah, the hands are exaggerated. You see, they are much larger than normal.
Yes.
But they don't look like this maybe on the image. But definitely that's something that I feel the hands are very expressive, and you can use them as a tool, like, to show any kind of situation of struggle, of tenderness, of all kinds of human emotions are expressed through the hands, definitely.
Yeah. My guest today is Luba Lukova, a visual artist and designer. She's a J. Donald Fagan visiting artist at the University of Tulsa. And Luba Lukova, Designing Justice, opens Friday at the Henry Zero Art Center for First Friday. Will be on display at the Zero Art Center in the Tulsa Arts District through April 19th. You can see her work on display. But all through this week, you're doing a residency with students. I think first time you came over, it was sort of some sort of educational outreach that brought you to the United States. I guess it was early 90s, I believe. What do you try to convey to students today?
We are working on a workshop for creating a poster that commemorates the centennial of the Tulsa Race Massacre. And I knew about this years before the school here, Teresa Valero, invited me to lead this workshop, just from my own research for different other projects that I work on. And the workshop is called Legacy of Hope. So these young people, designers, have worked already for more than 2 months on that. And we had two online sessions on Skype. I was in my studio. They were here at the classroom. And they showed me sketches. We talked. And yesterday was the final finishing session, one-on-one with each of them and showing the finished work. So they're doing some really great ideas through the eyes of a younger person, someone who did not witness that, and two generations, three even generations after the events. And you could see that they're really doing some fantastic work, and makes you feel optimistic about the future generations who are not shying from this experience, but they want to address it and hopefully prevent it from happening in the future through their messages in their posters. So great workshop. And there's going to be another session with younger kids even, who we will be having just 3 or 4 hours working together. And they will just use tools, hands-on workshop, again, addressing the same theme. So some of the best works will be shown in the Jason Gallery next to my show. So, But when I first came to this country, yes, I was invited to be part of an exhibit in Fort Collins, Colorado. They have seen my work done in Bulgaria, theater work for theater posters. And that was right after I finished school. So they saw that, they invited me, and that's how on my way back I went to New York.
And what gives you the greatest satisfaction today? Is it working on social justice issues, or is it working on theater posters, you know, these or arts-oriented things?
Yeah, I would say it's all intertwined, because I don't see a difference between my own personal work or social commentary work, which is my personal work, right? It's not commissioned. It comes from me. And all the theater artists I collaborate with, we share exactly the same ideas. And these are collaborations for years. So I don't even consider it work. It's like friends for whom we do things. It's all connected. But I've always believed that art and social commentary and morality, if you want, are connected. So I could not just do pretty pictures. I want the things to be pleasing, to kind of entice you to look at them, but then I want to give you a message that will hopefully stay in your head and you keep thinking about it. So it's all connected, but definitely drawing and painting and practicing, just drawing is part of my everyday work. And then thinking about things, I'm really, like I told you, a blue-collar artist. I want to be current and to address, to really bring visual art to be something that people can refer to for answers, not just watching TV or the movies or music, but really to kind of fill a void that the visual art kind of withdrew itself and became something that we can see only in the galleries with prices with 6 zeros and all that. So I want to be something accessible that you can have and hang in your room, and not only as a colorful spot, but something that will provoke thinking and conversation.
So. And you're part of a larger movement too. People like Shepard Fairey, like Banksy, for that example.
Yeah.
These are artists that are sort of rejecting where art has gone, and you're looking for more direct, very easily decipherable messages, for the most part, that will make you think still, but certainly in more concrete terms, I think.
Yes, but also I think, I don't know when this process began, I think it's probably in the 60s and 70s and 80s where art became, so the visual art became so distant from the ordinary person. It's something that you can only appreciate in a white box gallery or in a museum.
And when you're talking about that art, it's written in a language that is not the most easily decipherable to understand.
Exactly. And became also so existential for the creator that no one else can penetrate the meaning. Or sometimes you almost don't see even any craft left from the pure visual craft of creating images. Just so conceptual that honestly, if I had seen this type of art when I was a little kid, I would not want to become an artist, you know. I saw something from 4,000 years ago, which was these Greek vases that really triggered my imagination. I don't think if I see a broken chair in the corner with one-page statement, which we often see in galleries, I don't think that will inspire me to become a visual artist. And okay, there is an audience for that, but like I told you, I don't want to insult anybody, and maybe these are the white collar artists, you know, that do that type of stuff, you know.
Blue collar art is something different.
Yeah, something different.
Well, what are you working on now? This portfolio we're going to be showing, this is from work from 12 years ago.
12 years ago, exactly. So in the exhibition, you will see maybe work for two or three more portfolios. So I keep drawing and keep putting more and more stuff. And I just finished one series of work called Blues that I'm going to release in June. So this is 12 prints, like lithographs, that I love this music, okay? And I love music and arts in general, but blues music is something that I truly love. And not only the sound, but the lyrics. And that inspired me to put together these images that I twisted again in my way. So it's maybe about music, but also about the life and about so many issues we face that, you know, so it's my twist. You could see in this exhibit two of these images in this series. One is called Delta Blues. And another one is called Long Island City Blues, where my studio is. One is about the history and another one is about gentrification. So you see, it's about the blues, but it's mixed with everything else.
Is that the image with the skyscrapers and the harmonica?
Yes.
And it's very clever because the harmonica looks like the silhouette image of a skyscraper.
And these condominium buildings. This was, reflecting on, because this area where I am was an area where a lot of art studios are located, and it's musicians, theater artists, visual artists. And then at some point the realtors loved it and now completely destroyed it. They kicked us all out and they started putting all these exact glass towers with square apartments. And I just put this harmonica in between them to show that art hopefully can survive among that, or, you know, so... But other things, you know, one is one of these series reflects on Chicago gun violence and all that. But it's through the music somehow. But it's in my way when I twist things and I use simple images to hopefully say something important with that too. But in a completely different way, intertwined with music.
Well, you can see Luba Lukova's work, Designing Justice, opening Friday at the Zero Arts Center downtown, and it will be on display through April 19th. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, Luba. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Rich. Thank you.
Visual artist and designer Luba Lukova speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She's currently a J. Donald Fagan visiting artist at the University of Tulsa, with a residency going on this week. And an exhibit of her work, Luba Lukova, Designing Justice, opens Friday at the Henry Zero Arts Center in the Tulsa Arts District. It opens Friday evening with a gallery opening on First Friday and will run through April 19th. More information at utulsa.edu. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.